Call to order the February 2023 meeting of the Arizona State Barbering and Cosmetology Board. Now when I hit the...
Yes.
Awesome. So let's go ahead and start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everyone. My name is Brandy Flores, and I am officially the Secretary and Treasurer of the Arizona State Board of Cosmetology and Barbering. I never get the order correct there, but today Gary Begley will be on the phone, who is our chairman. And I'm going to go ahead and start the roll call of board members and staff. So let's start with...
Heather will actually do that for you. So.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Perfect.
Frank McGauley.
Present.
Kelly Shepard.
Here.
Isabella Legowski.
Here.
Heather Santafria. Present. Rosa Rodriguez.
Here.
Bruce Bueno.
Here.
Leticia Coleman.
Here.
Alexandra Hill.
Here.
Helen Dornelon.
Here.
Lisa Chavez.
Here.
Keegan McConnell.
Here.
And yes,
Chair, it'll take me a second to use that already. Our Assistant Attorney General is toggling between two board meetings this morning. We should not have any specific cases until 12:30, so she will come from the other board meeting at 10:30 to join us this morning.
Perfect.
So she will be present, but it will be a moment. So,
great.
Heather, if you would like to now do board member roll call.
Okay, so we have Brandy Flore.
Present.
Nick Goodman.
Present.
Marshall Knopf.
Present.
Tracy Mayfield.
Present.
Gary Begley.
Present.
Jake.
Present.
Chase is out. This will not be here today.
Oh, Chase is out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Trista.
And Trista moves McLever.
Present.
Fantastic. Sounds like everyone, most of our, we have a quorum short answer here. So we're going to move on to agenda item three, board business. There is a motion for board minute approval, any declarations of conflict of interest. That would be fantastic. Anyone want to make a motion for meeting minute approval?
This is Gary Begley. I move that we approve the minutes from the last month board meeting.
Fantastic. I'll second that. Oh, I call it. Sorry. Okay. Gary, I'm doing a bad job at your role today. Any discussion? Okay. So all those in favor of approving the January 2023 meeting minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing only ayes, the motion passes unanimously and board meeting minutes are approved. One more call for any conflicts of interest for board members today. Any conflicts? All right, sounds like there are none. So we are going to move forward to agenda item four, the executive director's report. And for that, I will turn it over to Frank Legale, our executive director.
Good morning, Ms. Chair, members of the board. It's kind of weird having our chair on, but virtually, so it's going to take me a moment to get used to that. I have what I hope to be a relatively short board report for you this month, because we just met, I think it was exactly 4 weeks ago. So I'm going to start with our January financials. Our appropriation was $696,000 for the quarter. Our January revenue was $204,000, and our expenses were $165,000. Our fund balance at the end of January 23 was $15,234,284, which is just shy of where it was a month ago, like by $60,000, I believe it was. I have placed full copies of our financial statement summaries in the shared drive, which you may wish to look at more details should you choose. For board membership and new appointments, as I'm confident you are all aware, there was an election in November. We have a new governor, new secretary of state. And through that transition, we do have a new director of the governor's office of boards and commissions effective, I believe it was last Monday. She's on ending her second week, Ms. Christine Deister. As soon as I was made aware last week that the director had been appointed, I immediately scheduled a meet and greet meeting for myself with her, which will occur on Tuesday morning. I do plan to just have that general meet and greet and also discuss the ongoing vacancies that the board has been experiencing. So we do have two remaining vacancies, a barber as well as a public member. I do not have any specific staffing updates for you this week, though I anticipate some additional members to the team in the coming weeks and or months. Our testing data for January of 23, as we discussed at last month's board meeting, for the year 2023, I'll do the prior month's testing data for everybody. And
for who? Can you please mute your phone?
She works at the board.
Hi, okay. Can you please?
Oh, that will be Windows 6.
Hi, we're hearing you talk, whoever's out there.
Oh, it will be.
If you could meet her, I don't want
Isabella,
you.
Can you? Thank you. So as we discussed last month, I'll start for 2023 doing prior month testing data results. Simply because it's off the ground, it's running that written practical examination piece that you all adopted in December of 2021, launched in May of 22, and here's where we're at. So we had four, that number is not correct. I apologize. The 76% average passing rate is correct, but the candidates tested is actually closer to just shy of 500 candidates tested. I apologize for that mistake in the presentation. And our average passing rate is at 76%. Other interesting thing, as we've been getting into this data, it helps us from a capacity standpoint with staffing, is that we actually know as of February 1st that we have 823 candidates scheduled tests between February 1st and the latest out was June 10th at that point. So really being able to forecast staffing when we can anticipate additional test approvals coming in the door so that we can make sure that we have staff aligned properly in those situations. The other interesting thing about that, of the 823, it was 600 were scheduled to test in the month of February. So we anticipate, we can now project that we will have 600 new licensees in March.
Question for you. Yeah. If someone fails the test, are they able to take it again?
Yes. Flores, yes, you can retake the test. There is an additional fee to retake the test with PCS, and they can schedule that at any of the ProMetric testing sites, in-state, out-of-state, anywhere they choose to do that around the country. But there is an additional fee at that point. I don't think it's the full fee, if I remember correctly, but yeah.
Got it. I was just curious. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Our overall licensing update, and this is going to be the lengthiest part of my presentation this morning. As you can see, most of our licensing functions do remain current. However, we are continuing to struggle with our establishment licensing. Last month, I mentioned that we had identified a process improvement that we do remain on track to launch around April 1st. This process improvement wraps up the license application and payment into one action, rather than the two actions that it currently requires applicants to do. That has been in place since the board staff began receiving applications electronically in early 2021. Unfortunately, as a result of the existing two-path process, one for applications and one for payments, we have identified a large swath of incomplete applications from 2022. In conducting our problem solving associated with establishment licensing, we identified the following data. And I want to start strength-based here and clearly identify that staff did complete and issue 1,438 establishment licenses in 2023. So that is huge. I do not want to minimize that fact by all in 2022.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to minimize. Okay, that'd be right. No, in 2022, I apologize. I don't want to minimize that fact that that much work was in fact done. And frankly, I can subjectively say a significant majority of that was from May through December. A lot of that did not occur until I arrived here. Unfortunately, the other side of that coin is that we do have 274 pending applications, and we have 463 applicants, in a sense, that have submitted a payment, but not their actual license application for an establishment. By way of definition, an application that is pending means they have made a payment and submitted an application to us. However, that application is incomplete, and we need additional information from them. In the case of no application, this means that we have received a payment, but the application has not been completed by way of submitting that application to us. As we've discussed in this meeting month over month, there's issues with emails and it going into spam and all of those things. Again, the process improvement that we identified in January should fix a significant majority of that, but it's going to be about April 1st before that launches with that new process. Now that we have a full understanding of the pending and no application applicants, we have established a plan to address the 737 establishments that are currently in limbo. The plan includes a concerted communication effort and an opportunity for those applicants to cure their applications and get them licensed as soon as possible. We have adjusted staffing and dedicated time of one of our staff members to lead those efforts. We do not have a specific timeline yet, as we just made those adjustments this week and are trying to determine exactly how long it's going to take us to address those 737. But it is a high priority for this team, and I intend to have a better idea of that timeline at the March board meeting. Additionally, we are taking steps to ensure that this does not occur again. Our licensing staff will now communicate with an applicant a minimum of 3 times within the first 30 business days if an application is pending or we have received a payment and no application. At that point, we feel we have provided quality customer service, and if they don't contact us or return our emails at that point, we have done the best that we can to support the applicant. Are there any questions from board members on that?
But one thought is sometimes if one email ends up in spam from one address, it's just going to keep going there. So is there any, will you be varying the communication style?
I think there is an opportunity for us to vary the communication styles. We haven't specifically landed on anything. I will tell you that we have a lot of bad email addresses as well. People completely mistype at yahoo.com, many typos on gmail.com. So we're really trying to decide what that does look like, but we're also going to start identifying what email addresses those items are coming from so that we can inform people you need to be on the lookout for this, because it's not from our server. It comes from an Adobe server, which I think is a huge part of that problem. Now we've got this bridge problem solving that we're doing to try to fix these items, but we are also doing that other item where it's going to be all wrapped up in one step in the payment portal. And we are also still working towards a completely new IT system that's got it all wrapped up in one as well. So we got this bridge to correct the problem as well as future state of a new IT system.
And as we reach out to this backlog, it will come from our email address.
Yes.
Great. It's like real human email addresses. That's great.
Yes. Not whatever. cloudfare@cloudfare.com or whatever it is. That's not a good example, but if I got an email from that right now, I probably wouldn't look at it. I'd delete it. Any other questions on licensing?
None from me.
So next up, we have the 2023 legislative update. As again, I'm sure you are all well aware. I don't know what just happened there. As you are all aware, the legislature kicked off their 2023 session on Monday, January 9th, 2023. To date, seven bills have been introduced that directly impact the work of our board and staff. The first is House Bill 2199, Cosmetology Instructors. It provides license reciprocity if an individual has at least 1 year of instructor experience in another state or country. This is adding a clarifying statement within the legislative language. Currently, there's not a lot of consistency across the country for instructor licenses. So this is allowing us to take experience rather than just license. There are states that don't offer instructor licenses, so that can't come here and instruct. So that's what that one is providing, that clarifying language. House Bill 2525 is related to unlicensed employees. This House Bill 2525 establishes a new program and registry administered by the Arizona Board of Barbering and Cosmetology to allow licensed participating shops and salons to employ unlicensed individuals. My commentary on this is that the bill was heard in committee last Wednesday, a week and a half ago, and has since died. It did not go anywhere at the legislature this week. This is crossover week, meaning it's the last week that bills can be heard in committee and be moved in each chamber, and it has not moved anywhere. I understand there is some political wrangling going on between the sponsors of 2525 and 2542, the next bill that was struck through before. My understanding is the sponsor of House Bill 2542 is against House Bill 2525, and therefore the bill dies. As a result of the sponsor of House Bill 2542 not supporting 2525, the committee chair struck 2542 from their committee meeting this week. So a little bit of political wrangling that is going on there. However, should something happen, that House Bill 2542 is a state licensure compact. There's a lot of work going on around the country to get licenses more unique, allow more mobility across states. The language is standard language, as all compact language is. If it were to happen to go anywhere, there is a delayed starting time frame until June 30th of 2024. And that was very specific to cosmetology license is. Next up, we have Senate Bill 1212, and this is for eyelash technicians. This establishes an eyelash technician registration under the regulatory authority of our board, and it outlines eyelash technician registration and regulatory requirements of no very specifically that we can offer a registration. It's not a license for eyelash technicians, and it can make it so that the statutory language for 1212 states that we cannot require any more than a 30-hour program for eyelash technicians. House Bill 2550 started out as a mirror bill for eyelash technicians that allows the Board of Barbering and Cosmetology to create and implement a registration requirement for eyelash technicians, and that language said a minimum of 30 hours. Therefore, it is no longer a mirror bill, and they will have to decide what direction they are going to take these bills. Both of these bills have passed out of committee and continue to move, although because it is crossover week, there has been no action. I got lucky in that board week was crossover week and I didn't have to spend much time across the street. Next up, we have SB 1087. The next two are not necessarily like regulatory items related to the work that we do as an organization, but do impact our business. So SB 1087 is related to license fees and waivers, and it requires an And it requires the outlined regulatory board, so more than just us, to provide a one-time licensure or certification fee waiver or reduction if the entity determines that its licensing fund ending balance will exceed 50% of the current fiscal year appropriation from that fund. So the example I use here, as I shared a moment ago, we have $15 million in our fund. While I certainly agree that that is way too much money sitting in our fund, I would be very concerned about ending any particular fiscal year with 50% or less, because that means that we would only, in other words, that means we only have 6 months of solvency as an organization. So there was talk across the street that they would increase that to 200%. So basically, for us, our annual appropriation is just shy of $3 million. That would bring our fund balance down to $6 million, which, again, we shouldn't be sitting on $15 million, but the legislature also has not given us appropriation authority to even attempt to spend down that funding in any way, shape, or form. Similarly, SB 1386 is another licensure fee waiver and appropriation. So this one prohibits a regulatory board or agency that regulates a licensee from charging any fee relating to licensure for state fiscal year 24 or 25. And this establishes the Occupational License Fee Waiver Fund to transfer monies to a regulatory board and agency that demonstrates a financial need. It appropriates $32 million from the state general fund in 2024 to support that fund. So there are many other regulatory boards and organizations that are not sitting on a $15 million fund balance. And if they would be able to apply to the state treasurer's office to ensure that their organization can remain solvent if there were an issue with fee waivers for those 2 years. Any questions?
In the past, and I think you might have done some digging on this already, in the past, has the board taken positions on legislation?
Member Flores, we have done some digging, and I'm actually getting conflicting information on this. I have heard, yes, that boards have taken positions, and I'll say boards, generally speaking, that have taken positions. I understand, as an example, last week the massage therapy board had an emergency meeting and did take a position on a specific bill. A lot has changed in the last 2 years as far as my understanding related to lobbying and our organization's abilities to take positions on bills and some of those types of items. So we have not taken any type of for or against position on any of these bills. I will say Deputy Director Shepherd and I spent a great deal of time across the street listening the last 2 weeks. I was asked to come forward and answer questions because I was in the room, though I was not signed in to speak, mm-hmm. on 2525 about how it would impact our organization. And I danced to be as neutral as possible, but they kept trying to push and push and push.
Lawmakers or advocates?
Lawmakers in particular were trying, I feel like they were trying to put me in a trap of trying to say whether we supported the bill or not. And I politely said, I'm here to answer the questions that you ask me so that I can educate you. And they, it was fun. Should you want to go listen to that, that speaking, to say the least. There was obviously political ideology in the room, both of lawmakers as well as advocates in the room. And I just did the best. I said, I think it, for us, I believe, although no analysis had been done, that it could impact our compliance team specifically as a result of risk-based inspections and investigations, that if there were unlicensed individuals working in a facility, it could create a situation. I very carefully said could create a situation that our compliance team would be heavily impacted as a result of needing to do more inspections or investigations in those places. they were trying to get me to go deeper. I didn't. And then I kind of got chewed out, but that's okay. That's what I'm here for.
If there was any, but the board would have to vote to take a position for you
and
to
give me direction. Okay. Yep.
Correct.
So for me, my understanding would be that the board would need to take a position on the board. We are not agendized to take a position on any bills today. That you would need to take a position and then direct me to advocate on behalf of the organization across the street.
Got it.
Again, I was told by an advocacy group last week that I could not do that. So that's why I'm saying there's some conflicting information, and I'm trying to get with legal counsel to find out get legal advice specifically what we would need to do should we get to that point. Next year, I intend to suggest to the board that we set a legislative committee that begins in November or January, and that we look at the legislative calendar so that we can have, even if they're just virtual meetings of that committee, so that we are better prepared for support or not, or if we can't do it at all next year.
Makes sense.
That's great. And just a question about the eyelash technician, the 1212 and the 2550. That's not an additional license, or is it?
It's a registration.
So you're licensed, and then you get a specific registration on top of that?
So it would allow me to go do, me, Frank McGalley, to go do a 30-hour course to put eyelash extensions on as a business to anybody. So you're not required any other of our licenses in this case.
You wouldn't need a full cosmetology or esthetician license.
Okay. And these are under review. None of these are...
Correct. They both passed out of those two particular bills have passed out of committee at this point, but it's crossover week. So now the other side has to decide if they're going to even hear it. And then if they hear it, it'll get assigned to committee.
And then the 2525 at this point is not moving forward.
So far, it did not go anywhere this week.
Okay.
Typically, when it passed out of committee last week, it would have come to the floor this week. It did not go to the floor this week, which leads me to believe it's bad. There was some other conversation, which I failed to mention, I apologize, on 2525, but they want to potentially expand the DES apprenticeship program to, right now it only includes cosmetology licenses and barber licenses. They would like to add nail tech, esthetician, and hairstyling to the apprenticeship program. We license just from an objective standpoint, we license very few individuals who go through that program.
Got it. Excellent. There's a lot of board history on the eyelash issue.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, is there. And I will just add that this has been an interesting, for me personally, I understand the legislative process, but I will tell you that the legislative process is very different than what you learn on Schoolhouse Rock. Very different. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Last month, we did discuss rule review and update, and we anticipated the projection was that we would actually be having a lengthy conversation about a new draft set of rules this month. Unfortunately, our contractor related to that work, Ms. Hahn, was caught up with the Secretary of State's office in an organizational impact of the rules. And I received the first draft set of rules from her this week. We as a staff were not able to do our review of the rules yet, my initial scan of it on Monday night was that she definitely took into account everything that we had identified last year through the board's vision of consolidating and eliminating rules that have no statutory reference and have that primarily health and safety focus. And my team who's been doing that, actually my team as a whole will tell you that every meeting we get on, we say, what's the health and safety impact of that regulation? The other thing I want to reiterate on this initial set of rules that I will get out to you in the next week or week and a half, just for your initial review, is that I want to be very clear that I think this set of rules is just our first stab at a set of rules. I very much so anticipate that we will do this again in the fall, but we need to get the barber and cosmetology regulations consolidated. So again, this review took us significantly longer than I ever anticipated, but I think future versions will go quicker as a result of the effort that we took this go around. So I did, like I mentioned, I received the draft set of rules on February 13th. Right now, I would plan that we have a rules agenda item at the March board meeting, which I believe, Brandy, you will not be here for, and I apologize. So if I get those rules out to you in the next week, if you want to provide some written feedback, we would certainly welcome that as you go on maternity leave. Speaking of board meetings, our next meeting is Friday, March 24th at 9 a.m. That is not the third Friday as the rest of our meetings are. That is the fourth Friday of March. I have already heard from making an assumption that Brandy is not going to be here, because I'm actually pretty sure that's your due date, if I remember correctly.
March 19th.
Yeah. Brandy will not be here in March, and I have heard from another board member that they are not available that day. So that leaves us with five members, which is exactly what we need for quorum. So if you anticipate, my ask is if you all can look at your calendars, and if there is any possibility that you are not going to make it to that March 24th meeting, I would rather know today or Monday or Tuesday, because we immediately at the end of this meeting begin preparing materials for the next meeting. And so I would prefer to not have to put staff through that arduous task of rules stuff, or not rules stuff, but agenda prep, if we're not gonna have a March board meeting. So if there's any possibility that you're not gonna be available, please let me know in the next couple of days.
And currently it does look like we would have a large agenda. So if we did not have a meeting in March, it would make our April meeting.
You're looking at it. What she's nicely saying is we're looking at a full day meeting in April if we don't meet in March, because we're still catching up from the December mess. Okay, so just let me know. And one thing I did not get in here that I want to give some recognition to is, I know I shared in the fall, I don't remember, I think it was September or October, that we have established a team that we are calling customer care. This has consolidated our customer service reps who answer the phones into one team. We have an additional support staff in Mr. Griffin, as well as, and that team is led by Bruce. I'm very excited that we invested in that team two ways this month. Number one, we launched an entire new phone system within the organization. It is called Genesis. It is a cloud-based phone answering system that, actually, quite frankly, when I get a phone message, it goes to my email now, which I love and appreciate, because it's a lot easier to handle those things by way of email. And the other part of it, that's one of the options that is now available in that system, is the person doesn't have to sit on hold. They can press, I don't actually know what the number is, but they can, as an example, they can press one and the system will call them back when the customer service rep is available. So we actually are going to be reducing our actual wait time for customers calling into the organization as a result of this new phone system.
And it still holds their place in the queue. They don't have to wait long.
So if we're at a 15 minute wait time, theoretically they would not be waiting any more than 15 minutes for a return call, but they don't actually have to be sitting on the phone for that 15 minutes. So it's really great. And it's all through the computer. So we can start potentially talking about virtual opportunities for our customer care team that have had to come to the office for the duration of all of this, because that opportunity was not there before. The second item that we invested in that customer care team this month is they all attended the Ken Blanchard Legendary Service Training this week. Just as the leadership team has been receiving Ken Blanchard training, Ken Blanchard offered a legendary service training. So the five members that I mentioned all got to attend that training this week. It was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I've not gotten an update on how that went or some key actions that we can do. But as you can tell from the vision that we set in January that I presented to the board in January, customer care is our central focus. And it was very important to the leadership team that we invest in our customer care team to be able to drive toward our vision of legendary customer service. Well, I think our vision says world-class customer care, but they received legendary service training. So with that, Ms. Chair, I will turn it back over to you.
Well, fantastic. Thank you for all of that information. That was very informative, Executive Director report today. Moving on to agenda item number 5, complaint review and consent agenda. It looks like for step 1, recommended application denials, there are none. So moving forward to step B, recommended dismissal. Are there any motions, discussion items for any of these cases? Those are welcome. Hearing none, is there a motion to accept or deny staff recommendations for these dismissals?
Goodman moves to accept the recommendation to dismiss by the staff.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second to accept staff recommendations to dismiss in step 5B. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, ayes have it, and we've accepted staff recommendations. Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to step C, recommended non-disciplinary letters of concern. Is there any discussion about any of these cases? Also welcome motions to accept or deny staff recommendations. I'm happy to make a motion to accept staff recommendations for non-disciplinary letter of concern for all those cases listed in step 5C.
Second it by Mr. Knox.
There you go.
Excellent. So we have a motion and a second to accept staff recommendations for non-disciplinary letters of concern for all cases under C. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Hearing none opposed, motion passes unanimously for step 5C. Moving on to step 5D, recommended informal interview or negotiation terms. Any discussion or motion on these cases is welcome.
Guzman Glover moves that we accept staff recommendations in step 1D, recommended for informal interview or negotiation terms.
Second, Mr. Knox.
Excellent. So we have a motion for step 5D, accept staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. All right. We are moving on to 6, items for board review, discussion, and possible action. My understanding is that step 6A, we are not going to be able to handle today due to some wording challenges. Frank, if you have any.
Yep. Madam Chair, members of the board, yes. Even with 6 pairs of eyes on this agenda throughout the week, we did make a mistake on our agendized language that was not identified until we were within the 24 hours of the board meeting, and therefore we could not change the agenda and or provide proper notice to the two respondents in these cases. And I also am not seeing them in the room, so we would be unable to correct the language and hear those cases this month. So we will table those until next month. For reference, these are 2 motion to deem cases. These are cases that have gone through the informal interview process, and we have not heard any. Well, we have, number 1 has actually settled, but it still has to go to the board for a vote. Number 2, we have not heard anything from, so we would have to go through that formal process of that disciplinary action in that case. So those will be continued to the March board meeting.
Thank you very much. So then we move on to step 6B, review, discussion, and possible action regarding board order with probation terms to include random monthly inspections. It looks like we have two cases there. The first one, 97223 and 97634, Picture Rock Hair Care.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Yeah, you did it. I was just going to give I was going to lay the groundwork for our investigator to walk up to the podium.
Great.
These two cases in 6B are updates for you, as these two cases were placed on probation at previous board meetings, and the board had asked in those probation terms for an update. I think it's a 3-month mark, if I remember correctly. In this situation, Ms. Bordelon happens to be the investigator on both cases, so she can start with number one.
Perfect.
All right. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Helen Bordelon. So the first one for Picture Rock Care Care, case numbers 97223 and 97634. As you'll recall, this is a follow-up, like Mr. McGalley said. This is the establishment that had her tax in the salon that she claimed was for service. So on October 21st of 2021, during the board meeting, the owner did appear. The board motioned to assess a $250 civil penalty and place the establishment on a 90-day probationary period with random inspections. So on January 19th, I went out and did a routine inspection to Picture Rock Hair Care, license number SBOS 3886, and I did find that the animal is still living in the establishment. There's photos attached. So basically, she has a room that she has designated as the cat's room. There's toys, his litter box. He does have like a doggy door access to get outside, but the cat still remains in the room. And on one of the photos, if you look, there is a she posted a authorized personnel only. She does claim that the cat remains in that room and it does not come out of that room. So there's that.
So it's the same building, but it's different. But there's two different rooms. One is the hair salon.
So basically, if you look at it, like it's kind of like a mobile home. So when you walk in, you're in the salon and there's three chairs and a dryer, whatever. Then you go down the little hall, there's a restroom, and then what would be a bedroom, so to speak, is the cat's room. And the cat lives there, and that's where they have their break room with their refrigerator and table.
Apologies, I wasn't at the, Goodman, I wasn't at the January meeting. We didn't direct her to create its own living establishment for the cat or anything, did we? I mean, there was no discussion like that. So she did this of her own, it sounds like. No one else or nothing else is taking residence in this. I mean, the owner doesn't live there, does she?
Not that I'm aware.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't appear.
Yeah, and it does, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Any other board member questions?
I don't understand what the what was she cited for and fined for to begin with.
So originally, this goes back to December, a year or so ago. So originally, there was sanitation issues.
Sanitation issues, yes. Regarding
and,
the cat.
And then, of course, the cat. The cat was allowed to roam freely throughout the salon. She stated that the cat was a service cat to rodent control. For rodent control.
Okay.
So then with that being, I had to go back and do a follow-up inspection, and at that time the cat was still in the salon.
Okay.
She came in, the board assessed a $250 civil penalty with random inspection on my probationary period, early termination. So that led me up to the January follow-up inspection.
Where is the cat still there?
Correct. The sanitation violations were fixed. Everything seems fine.
Madam Chair, Member Mayfield as well, for some perspective, because I know you weren't at that board meeting, I believe it was November, if I remember correctly, that there was a lengthy legal discussion about what's allowable for a service animal, and cats are not by law considered a service animal by state or federal law, service animal. So the respondent was, their claim was that it was a service animal for rodent control. We had a lengthy discussion that you can't have a service animal. You can't call it a service animal, I think is what the language that was settled on, because that's not allowable by state or federal law. Only dogs and, in a few rare occasions, mini horses.
So if a mini horse was inside there, there'd be no but it sounds like she is attempting to mitigate the appearance of it living freely in the salon portion of the building by having this room, is what I'm understanding. Any questions or thoughts, motions by the board?
This is Bagley. So is the cat able to run around in the salon?
Mr. Bagley, she claims that the cat is not out of the room. The cat remains in that closed room. When I went for the inspection, the cat was not in the salon. The cat was outside, trying to get into the salon, but was outside.
Madam Chair, the cat, my understanding, was actually scratching at the door.
Correct.
To get in. The salon door, not the door to get into the separate bedroom.
Sounds like it's upset that it got kicked out.
Well, yeah, this is Goodman. If not having the cat in the salon is what we need to do, and I think everybody would probably see that as the right goal, having it live there is not going to get us to that end, in that it will come in with a customer. That's what cats do, is they run through small openings, or it'll come in from the break room door when a staff member goes in the break room. So though her efforts seem admirable in a distinct way, for us, I don't think she's complying. I don't know that further penalties at this time, but probably education directions warranted to say, this isn't getting us to the end that needs to be, achieved.
I'm not sure that did we actually say the cat, did we make a motion that the cat was the reason for the fine, or was the reason for the fine other sanitation issues? I think it was other sanitation issues, and we expressed concern about the cat being present, and so it sounds like this is an attempt to mitigate.
I mean, I'm guessing it would depend on, yeah, is it sanitation? This time it wasn't the sanitation, but there is the cat. And so what is the, you can't have a cat, they have a cat.
I would argue that, or, I mean, we're going to start putting, like, you must be 10 feet from the premises if you're a cat. Like, that seems a little unrealistic.
So I didn't say the cat was in the salon. Yeah. And we inspected, nothing we could, even though it was scratching at the door, cat was not in the salon. Cat's in the salon. You can't say, well, the cat was attempting to get in. Cat wasn't in the salon. We inspected there with the code. We do another inspection. If the cat's there, well, then we can say something. Until then, nothing really we can do.
And apologize my ignorance on this. Isn't it required to have an employee break room? And if it is, then so there's no requirement of that? Okay. So no space has to be provided, because one could argue that is the salon if it's required. But
Madam Chair, Member Goodman, I was sitting here thinking something similar, like we license the address.
Yeah. Right?
We license the facility at the address. So I don't want to make a legal argument. I'm not the lawyer. But that is an interesting point, that just because it's in the break room doesn't necessarily mean it's not in the salon.
And this is Goodman again on that point, we've had times people come in front of us that the cleanliness of their break room has been shown as evidence that the facility is not up to the standards that are needed. So this, at least in the past, we've acted that the break room's part of the salon. And I, you know, I have nothing against cats. I'm allergic to them, but don't cause, you know, that's not reason for the argument.
I don't think we have regarding the break room situation. I think that to the extent it's been storage rooms looking at the supplies used in the salon, to my knowledge and memory, we don't actually regulate any of the facilities within a break room. We make sure they have a sink, all those sorts of things, but.
Yeah, that's a challenge because sometimes the break room is the supply room and
actually that.
Members of the board, there are photos in your file.
Yeah. Well,
I guess the other question and why I would caution trying to force compliance or, you know, a perceived lack of compliance here is we don't go into every locked door at an address where a salon is licensed. And so to, you know, that woman could have easily locked that door and said, it's not part of my salon. So, you know, if it wasn't in the salon where services are being conducted, it wasn't in the salon where services are being conducted.
Madam Chair, members of the board, one of the options on the table, I think, at this point is to continue the probationary terms as well. And we can continue making random inspections at the location and provide you an update 3 months from now.
This is the first of the, like, or were we just doing one follow-up and?
Correct. So originally, way back when, this was a high-risk, inspection.
Yeah.
Sanitation and the cats or whatever. And then the board dismissed it in December last year. So there was a second follow-up because it has already been deemed a high-risk.
Got it.
So, yeah, so this is a follow-up after a follow-up for a follow-up.
Lots of following up. The board is very good at that.
This is Trista Guzman Glover. There were no other sanitation issues like we had seen previously.
No, Madam Chair, Ms. Glover, there were no other sanitation issues on January
18th. Okay. Were there supplies or things for the salon in that room?
I'm sorry.
If there were supplies or any, was there any of the salon stuff, for lack of a better word, inside the chat room?
They had cleaning supplies. That's where they keep most of their cleaning stuff. But that's, you know, no, I didn't see any, like, firm rods.
Thank you.
I don't have a motion, but I appreciate the update. If any other board members have any motion, we don't have to make a motion. It's a possible action, right? We just listen.
Correct.
All right. No, hearing no motions from anyone on the board, we can move along. Thank you to case number 97590.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I'm Helen Bordelon. This is for case number 97590, Augustine Ramirez. This is also a follow-up from April 7th of 2022. I conducted a routine inspection of Augie's Real Talk hair salon. At that time, he was unlicensed. The establishment was unlicensed. On September 16th, at the board meeting, the board moved to offer Augustine Ramirez a consent agreement and a $500 civil penalty with 12-month probationary period with early termination. On January 19th, I did a follow-up of Augie's Real Talk Hair Salon. As inspected, as ordered by the board, the salon was closed and they were not performing services at that time. A note was posted on the door saying that they were closed for 21 days. That was on January 9th of 2023. And that same day, after I returned, according to the board's database, the license was issued for Augie's Real Talk, license number SCOS32940. With an expiration date of January 19th, 2024. So he is licensed.
So it sounds like he's licensed, compliant. Things are handled.
And the fine was paid then?
No. Trustee Rodriguez, there was a disciplinary level concerning.
Okay, I thought there was a $500 fine that you referenced. My apologies.
There was the previous one, but he appeared.
Okay. Thank you. So resolved.
Okay.
Perfect. Any discussion, motions, thoughts, other comments? All right. I don't hear anything from the board, so I think we are done with step 6B. Thank you so much, Ellen. All right. Moving on to step 6C, review, discussion, and possible action to rescind motion to informal interview with negotiation options and possible action to accept staff recommendations to issue a non-disciplinary letter of concern or dismissal. So my understanding here is that we had made a motion to do an informal interview, but there must be some new information because now staff recommendations change. So Rosa, please tell us.
Madam Chair and members of the board, this is Rosa Rodriguez, compliance administrator. Yes, on case number 97782, Smart South Store number 1140, license number SCOS 2830. I would like to ask the board to rescind the previous motion to assess the penalty of 250 and issue a non-disciplinary concern for not notifying the board of ownership change. They sold the business back in March of 2021. At the time of the inspection, there was new management. The establishment was found with sanitation violations. A new inspection has been conducted, and the establishment, they conducted a new inspection, and the establishment was not in compliance. But we do have a new case and it's under review.
Okay. So for this case, we want to dismiss because this wasn't the owner.
Yes.
Okay. Anyone want to make that motion to rescind the old motion and make a new motion or do it all in one package?
This is Goodman. I know it seems like nuance, but so we assessed the old owner for it not filing the change of ownership. As the licensee in the past, aren't they responsible as well to be part of this change of ownership? So we assess the right person potentially, or one of the two right people.
We assess the penalty to the old licensee.
Which the legal requirement includes their obligation to make sure we know of the change. So I have some issues with rescinding it or taking it back, and that we assess the penalty to somebody who should have done something they didn't.
I think the responsibility falls on the new owner, not the old owner.
That's my question, really. Is it both parties or one party that's responsible?
Madam Chair, Member Goodman, I apologize. I think the intention here is that we need to rescind the informal interview aspect
of the
situation and that penalty because they did not own it they did not own the salon at the time of the inspection. When we identified these issues, okay? So that's step one, okay? Step two is issuing I believe I heard non-disciplinary letter of concern to the prior owners or determination for what they want to do for the prior owners for not notifying the board pursuant to Arizona Administrative Code that they sold the business. So, and then we will be, I believe you all may have already approved it going to an informal interview in the other section or no, Rosa?
It's under review.
That part. Okay. So staff is now reviewing what the staff recommendation to the board would be for the current owners of those violations.
Yeah.
And the fine was not for the lack of ownership change notification. It was the sanitation.
The fine was, and so yes, the previous owner would, if we act that way, would get a letter of concern from us saying, hey, when you change ownership, you need to tell us. Okay, I'm good with it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Great questions, actually.
Just trying to understand.
Are we?
Sure.
Goodman, move that we follow the staff recommendations in case 6C.
We do have to choose between non-disciplinary letter of concern or dismissal. for the change of ownership. I personally would prefer dismissal, but it sounds like you have a...
Yeah, I would prefer, I'd move the non-disciplinary letter of concern to the previous owner since it didn't act, but that's how a motion would be.
So you want it to be non-disciplinary?
Bagley second.
Yeah, non-disciplinary, okay. Yeah.
I'll second that.
Okay, so we have a motion for a rescinding the previous informal interview motion and changing it to a non-disciplinary letter of concern motion for case number 97782. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes unanimously.
Madam Chair, members of the board, that brings us to section 7 of the agenda, which is scheduled to start at 10:30 a.m. I am seeing 10:03 by my clock, which means we have a little bit of a break between now and when informal interviews start.
Okay, so that means that we are going to have a break of this board meeting, and I'm just going to, just for fun, hit the hammer again. Well, we're reconvening at 10:30.
For those on the phone, we will be muting it, and there, we won't. We will restart at 10:30.
I'm just going to check Joe. She just had, she said she sent you, is your meeting over or are you on break?
I'm on break till 10:30.
She said she had sent you a text, a person called in and said that they had just been informed that a new law had passed that estheticians could do injectables, and she wondered if she could come. And then she also said, can I come to school? I have to have a high school diploma to come to school. And Angela said, well, a high school diploma, GED, or the ability to benefit. And she goes, what if I pay cash? So it sounds like almost an entrapment thing, you know?
Well, three, you have the ability to benefit. Can you test you?
Right, she didn't want to. Oh. And so she said, of course, I pay cash. And this is all on the phone. So
hey,
you
Gary.
Know.
Hello?
Hey, your phone isn't muted, just so you know.
Oh, I thought he said everybody was muted. Sorry.
I think he just muted the conference line.
All right. Well, I'm just doing business.
I totally get it. I just wanted to let you know in case you were concerned.
Thank you.